Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to another Rahulastapa Book Club. This week we are discussing Into the Uncanny, a book by the wonderful Danny Robbins, who is joining me now. Hello, Danny. Lovely to see you again.
Hello. It's good to be here.
Yeah, lovely. Look, this is obviously you've kind of we talked to you during lockdown, I think, didn't we, for regular Rahulastapa, and we've discussed it. But you've made the supernatural into your little niche of the world, and you're the perfect person to do it. I think I was this book is, I said to you beforehand, it was absolutely gripping. I kind of was I was on holiday when I read it, but I kept on, like, when everyone was asleep, I went back to it because I really wanted to find out what happened next. But you, because you are you're neither a skeptic or a believer, really. I mean, slightly maybe more than the skeptic. You are good at finding the humor in it, but equally, you are good at finding the scariness in it. So you sort of turn out to be the perfect person to explore this thing.
That's very kind. I mean, I definitely straddle. I have a foot in both camps. And and I think that's important, I think, for the way I look at it. I sort of feel like if I'd had my own experience, people often ask me, have you seen a ghost? I haven't. If I'd had that, I think I wouldn't have the necessary objectivity. But at the same time, I sort of sometimes feel that the thing that annoys believers about skeptics is the idea of the kind of one size fits all explanation, that you have this kind of menu of explanations to choose from: sleep paralysis, hallucinations, infrasound, carbon monoxide poisoning, all these sort of things. And you don't really look at the details of the case. You just kind of say, well, it must be that. It must be that. And actually what I love to do is plunge into the minutiae of these human stories. I see them as human dramas. And I think for me, I guess the thing that I feel like the difference in my approach, I suppose, from most paranormal things that have come before, is that people have been very obsessed with places. People are obsessed by haunted castles and pubs and that kind of thing. And actually, I'm really interested in people. I'm interested in the fact that this person had a bizarre, frightening, life-changing experience. And in a way, it doesn't matter to me if it's ghosts or not. I mean, it does on a huge level because I'm desperate to prove the existence of ghosts. But I think it's equally fascinating whichever way you go. And I think that's why skeptics can read this book or listen to my programs and enjoy it, because whether it's the how done it or the who done it, you know, if you're trying to prove the environmental and psychological factors or you're trying to prove who the ghost is, it's still a fun detective story for you to go on, I think.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I would also put myself in the skeptical camp, but I would like you. I would love it to be true and like you. And I think maybe people of our generations and around our generations, we had so many childhood books. You mentioned the Usborne books in your book, but there were so many of those kind of ghost stories and UFO stories. And you kind of really wanted them to be true. It was partly why one of my first radio shows was Lionel Nimrod's Inexplicable World. And that was down to my sort of, you know, I was fascinated by it all. Didn't believe it, but really wanted to believe it, and sort of, and with religion as well, I think a little bit. You partly, you know, you were scared of it, you wanted it to be true, you were scared about whether it was going to be true. And so, yeah, so it really, I think, yeah, you're right. I think if you are a complete skeptic, you'll still enjoy these, your podcasts and the books. And if you are a complete believer, you will really enjoy them as well.
I think definitely. I think there's a real nostalgia for that period when the imagination seemed limitless, and you know, you had ghosts and UFOs and cryptids and yetis and Loch Ness monsters and all those kind of things. And I think we've been through a period of time where the parameters of our imagination were very prescribed. You know, where we had you know, Harry Potter and the Avengers and Star Wars and all these kind of things that sort of set some sort of limits for the universe and created all the characters we needed. And actually, I think now, kind of going back to that, the kind of glorious uncertainty of it all, I guess, you know, the kind of the sense that outside the realms of our understanding of the world, there might be these fascinating, scary shadows. I can certainly see a real nostalgia for that in the audiences who come to my pods, you know. I think it's what kind of burns in me. And, you know, someone sent me this amazing old collection of ghost stories the other day with this brilliant article in it called "Is Your Child's Friend a Ghost?"
Yes,
all about how you know, like your imaginary friend could be a ghost. But I think, you know, we're definitely living through a moment where we are interested in the paranormal again in a kind of with an intensity, I guess, that I don't think we have had for quite a while. And I personally think it comes out of periods of great uncertainty and chaos in our world. I think if you look at the First World War, post-Second World War, the 60s, that time of huge change and chaos, you know, massive interest in the paranormal, the occult, great kind of era for horror movies. And I think it's, you know, it's there now. And I think, you know, the more disenchanted we become with our world, the more we go looking for another world out there somewhere else, you know. And you see it in the kind of rise of interest in space travel at the moment. You know, we're trying to get back into space because we're fucking up our own planet, you know. And we, and you know, the ghosts and UFOs kind of interest is absolutely part of that, I think, that desire to step outside of our reality into another one.
Yeah, I mean, that's you know, again, both the podcast and the book is you know, you do kind of encompass that you're looking into the psychology of it as well as whether it's true or not. You know, and I guess you pick very good cases, and all the cases in this book into the uncanny are new ones that you haven't done on the podcast before, right?
Yeah, totally. They're all brand new. They all come from emails that people have sent me over the last few years. And I guess the thing that I felt really strongly about when doing these things, I mean, because I'm, you know, got this autumn coming up where I'm doing a book, a TV series, a podcast and a tour. And I just felt like repetition dulls, and there's nothing exciting about hearing a ghost story you've heard before. Yeah. You know, so I felt like each one, I wanted it to be different and to have you guessing and being gripped until the end. And so, you know, the book is totally new cases. The tour is totally new cases. The TV series are totally new cases. And I just think, you know, it's very easy. You know, podcasts are remade as books and TV series and films and all sorts of things at the moment. But you know, you hear the story in the podcast, and then when you hear it again somewhere else, you're just hearing it in a different way with pictures or whatever, and it's not as exciting, I think, you know. So for me, it felt very important to have kind of brand new content in each one.
I mean, they're very, very strong. They're all very strong stories, as I'll have to say. So it is impressive. I mean, you're obviously getting lots of stuff in, but you concentrate on three or four main stories in this. So there's a poltergeist in Rome, there's ghost horses in running through people's houses, Ouija boards, and a story I think I remember from one of those childhood books of the policeman coming across the UFO in the road in the snow.
So I mean, that's we've got a new UFO story in this book, but it kind of leads me into an old one as well, one that we did cover in the podcast, the Todmorden story about Alan Godfrey, the policeman in Todmorden in Yorkshire, who had this very strange experience and has become one of the kind of most well-known cases in the UK, I guess, or certainly one of the kind of most significant. But yeah, but the story that leads me into it in the book is this bizarre and completely new story about this guy in Middlesbrough something truly kind of terrifying on his street, and then also kind of feeling that he's having contact with things up in the sky above him. And I think, you know, UFOs is something that I wasn't as interested in as ghosts kind of growing up, I think, you know, and it's something that I felt maybe I dismissed more easily. But actually, as I've been doing the pods, I've been sent a lot of UFO stories as well, and I've realized that they have the same impact really on people. And you could describe them as UFO hauntings. They leave people haunted. They leave people searching for answers in the same way as the ghost hauntings do. And I think, you know, now, absolutely, with the interest coming out of all the stuff in America, the Pentagon hearings, there's this burning desire for answers. And so it felt totally right to do a UFO story in this book.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. And, you know, and I suppose UFO stories are, even skeptics can say, well, that might be, that, you know, it's more than possible that there are aliens, whether they could make it to here and, you know, and whether they hatch out of an egg or whatever it was that happens in that story in front of your face. I mean, yeah, so, you know, it is interesting to connect them. And also the story that connect the Rome poltergeist connects everything with religion as well, very, very strongly, which again is the same impetus, isn't it? It's believing in forces beyond our understanding.
I think also, yes, but also trying to make sense of death as well. I think, you know, like every religion ever founded has tried to answer the question about what happens to us when we die. And that's absolutely what ghost stories are trying to do as well. And I think, you know, whether it's conscious or unconscious, I think all of us are probably driven, you know, our interest in ghosts is driven by that desire for death not to be the end. I think, you know, it certainly is with me, you know, and I talk about this in the book about how, you know, I had a chronic fear of death at one time in my life, you know, when I was kind of in the grip of anxiety. And the idea of ghosts offering optimism and hope and, you know, proof that death is not the end is a huge, huge motivator for me, I think. And religion as well. I mean, that's another thing that I cite in the book as an influence. But I think, you know, growing up an atheist with Catholic grandparents and feeling the sense that you might have made a mistake, you know, that, you know, what if your parents got it wrong? What if, you know, you should have been in that club, you know? And I think I was really, really enthralled to that for a long time, wondering if there was something out there that I was missing out on. And I think as time went on, it definitely became ghosts rather than God. You know, ghosts became the kind of receptacle for my interest in belief. But I think that, you know, I mean, you might remember I did that sitcom about monks, you know, Hey, we're the monks, you know, we did two ill-fated pilots of it that some people may, you know, the more hardcore comedy aficionados may have come across. But you know, I went to monasteries for that, researching that. And I've kind of tapped into religion a few times in my life and the occult and all these kind of things. I just think I am fascinated by belief, what makes people believe. Because to me, it feels like there must be some experience or evidence at the heart of that, because pure belief without any reason feels mad. you need some sort of evidence on which to base your beliefs, I think. And so the idea that somebody has had an experience that allows them, that kind of legitimizes belief in ghosts or belief in gods, just fascinates me.
It is very interesting. But I wonder, you know, it's when I ask the question on my podcast, have you ever seen a ghost? It seems to fairly fall down the lines of people who I can usually guess who's seen a ghost based on what I imagine their mental state is. So the slightly more, you know, the comedians who are slightly more out there and flighty, and you can sort of say, I bet you've seen a ghost. And the ones that are kind of a bit more logical, you think, I think you probably haven't seen a ghost. And I wonder how it's interesting, isn't it? How much of it comes from just, you know, a mental issue or a drug issue or a sleep issue or an alcohol issue. But equally, it's interesting in these stories, most of them have some kind of backup from somewhere, you know, from somewhere else. So the opening story where the contents of a fridge in Rome keep on getting moved across, you know, that could be a guy going into some kind of sleep state and doing it himself, or it could be, again, the girls in the flat doing it very subtly and cleverly somehow. But different people have experienced that same thing, and it's hard to explain how that would be the case.
Yeah, yeah, and I think, you know, it's interesting. You're talking about that idea of the type of person who sees a ghost, and I definitely had that in my head at one point. But I think that doing what I've done over the last few years has kind of destroyed that stereotype for me. And I think that through the podcast, we've certainly found that there is no type of person. And the stories that have set my pulse racing most have been the ones that come from the person who says, I don't believe in ghosts, yes, but I have seen a ghost, you know. And that's sort of become, you know, the kind of uncanny benchmark in a way that you want the skeptic who has the road to Damascus conversion. And yeah, I mean, I think clearly the multiple witnesses thing is the thing that really feels very convincing. And you know, we've had these cases on the pod, like the Room 611 case, where this guy was living in a student hall of residence bedroom, had these strange experiences, discovered that people the year before and the year after had had them. And then when it went out on air, suddenly loads of other people came forward to say they'd had these experiences. And suddenly you feel like, you know, this is a phenomenon. You have something here that merits massive investigation. So I think, you know, in the book, each of the cases, you know, it's this sort of 6 degrees of separation. You start to find, like, you know, one person leads to another, and the case spreads out, and you start to find more and more people who've had these experiences connected to this place. And exploring that idea of whether, you know, some of us are more receptive to things, you know, whether there is that, you know, idea of us being like a radio able to tune into things, you know, that, you know, maybe different people can enter places and some will experience something and some won't.
Yeah, well, you know, and there are definitely, you know, we're even as much as the human race has managed to understand an amazing amount about the place we live in, the universe we live in. There's a lot of things we don't understand. We don't understand why we're here at all, really. We don't understand how life starts. So, you know, the stuff you say about, like, emotions, and you talk about whether rooms can sort of become, you know, videotape, which is maybe a bit out there, but you don't know what, you know, an emotion is an energy, and energy isn't destroyed, you know, so there may be some way that something from the past can hang around into the future. You know, it's not beyond the realms of science, I would say.
I think, you know, what I've always enjoyed is like laying everything out on the table and exploring it and keeping an open mind, I think, throughout, and kind of listening to stuff, but at the same time not being credulous and not jumping on certain things. You know, like, you know, in the book I talk about stone tape theory, and I have a quantum physicist explaining why stone tape theory can't exist. You know, it's like, you know, you wouldn't get that on Most Haunted. You know, I think it's important to kind of explore all these different things and kind of probe each one and see kind of how it stands up to a bit of interrogation. But I don't know. I mean, I feel acutely that I love the idea that we have not discovered everything there is to discover. And I think about the excitement of the Victorian era, discovering, you know, cures for diseases and electricity and new species. And, you know, to have that thrill of being at the forefront of something, a new frontier, I love that idea. And sort of plugging in, I guess, to that kind of golden age of 1930s ghost hunters like Harry Price, you know, that kind of excitement where being a ghost hunter was a bit like Indiana Jones, you know, kind of, you know, that kind of exciting, slightly gung-ho, we're gonna try and crack this mystery. And I love all that, but I don't know. I mean, ultimately, each of these stories that I'm told boils down to a moment where a skeptic, you know, often a scientist, says, this can't happen, and the person, the witness at the heart of it, says, it happened to me. You know, and it's very hard to reconcile that, you know, and it's kind of like, you know, you had to be there kind of thing. But actually, you know, these stories kind of transcend that and go beyond that, because there's so many different witnesses coming to the table, I think. And, you know, there's a lot of evidence that accumulates. But it's a really interesting dilemma, that. And I think it's that, how do we, as a society, as a people, kind of deal with that kind of thing where, you know, like, somebody has had this profound experience, and you know, we try and debunk it, we try and sort of dismiss it, and yet, you know, the profundity of what happened to them is so intense that they cannot possibly reconcile this. I did one story for my first podcast series, Haunted, about this guy who'd had this kind of dreamlike vision, and he was this totally sensible, rational guy, this kind of advertising exec in his 50s, I think, by that time. Really kind of, you know, kind of sensible guy. And he just could not move beyond the fear that he felt in that moment. It was so terrifying to him that it felt like it had to be real. And even though every rational bit of him told him it must be a dream, it must be sleep related, he could never accept that. And it never provided the answer that would give him peace, because it had been so terrifying. He couldn't ever kind of put a lid on that fear.
Yeah. And there must be, there's an answer to all that. That's what, as you say, it doesn't matter what's true and what isn't true. There is a reason that these things are happening, even if it turns out to be, you know, internalized, or, you know, the power plant is frying people's brains or whatever. There is a reason. And so science should be there to try and work it out. I mean, either psychologically or whatever, or if there's a like a physical cause of it, or even if it's beyond that. And, you know, as you say in the book, science is finding new things all the time, things on a micro level that seem impossible to us. And I think, you know, physics is getting to the point where the stuff that they come out with is weirder than religion and ghost stories.
Yeah, totally. I had a really interesting conversation with a physicist for my TV series about how it was possible to travel in time. And it was so complicated and confusing that I can't quite get my head around it. But basically, something to do with traveling out of space and going at light speed. You know, if you'd done that, if you'd gone at light speed, you would come back and you would be the same age as people that you've grown up with, and yet they would be older than you. And it was, you know, like, it was a way to kind of travel through time. But, you know, yeah, certainly physics has, you know, all this kind of dark energy, dark matter, you know, kind of, you know, things that are absolutely kind of bizarre and strange in their own way. I just think that the possibility of ghosts existing is hugely exciting. And I think that, you know, approaching the stories as a skeptic, they're brilliantly gripping stories where it's like an Agatha Christie, where you've got this kind of room full of suspects, and, you know, it could be, could it be infrasound? Could it be, you know, the underground river? Could it be all these kind of things? You know, but I think, you know, introducing that idea that one of the suspects is a ghost, that this could all be real, just for me adds that incredible frisson of, you know, something that changes our entire view of the universe. And I feel that the more that I have been sent these stories, and the more that I have told these stories, and the more that I have been unable to provide answers for these mysteries, the more I feel open to that being a potential solution. You know, I sort of feel, you know, absolutely divided down the middle, but I just love, you know, I feel like this kind of, you know, head rush, this kind of, you know, my heart starts beating faster when I think about that possibility.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Yeah, and you're managing not to go down the rabbit hole. The danger of these things, I suppose, is just, my theory, which is a rabbit hole theory, which if you started really believing it would lead to some terrible places, is the obvious thing that we're kind of living in a simulation and that any ghosts or anything like this happening is just it's a shoddy simulation. Someone's put this together and we think we're living in it, and just there's glitches and things from the past appear that shouldn't be there. But if you start going down that rabbit hole, then you start believing some terrible and weird things. And you managed to keep yourself, I think, so far, I would say, Danny, you seem to have kept yourself anchored on the in reality as well as yeah, opening your mind to this.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think I deal in the very domestic and the mundane, really. I sort of feel like, these stories take place in very ordinary houses to very ordinary people. And I'm often really fascinated by just the sheer kind of the really mundane details. I mean, I talk about this in the book, but, the idea of, a cardigan going missing, one of the freakiest stories, I mentioned it in the book, one of the freakiest stories that somebody told me was about taking off his jeans, putting them onto a chair, turning round. When he turned back, the jeans were no longer there. They disappeared. He was the only person in his house. There were no windows open, nothing around him. His jeans just disappeared from that chair. Where did they go? He never found them again. I think it sounds silly. It sounds almost comic, but it is impossible. And as soon as you are open to the idea of the impossible, then that feels like a wonderful helter-skelter ride, But I don't know. I mean, I for me, fear comes from the real. I always think, the things that feel most real feel the most frightening to me. That the one of the horror movies that has freaked me out the most in recent times is The Babadook, which I don't know if you've seen or anyone's seen, but it's this brilliantly kind of real thing about a mother and her child stuck in a house together. And, are they being haunted by some horrible, horrific spirit that has leapt out of the pages of the child's book, or is it all in her mind and is she going mad, and it's utterly terrifying because of that uncertainty, I think. And so I guess, with all these stories, I try and really kind of lean into that uncertainty, that realness, and the fact that we are not sure, the fact that you're never certain if it's a ghost, and it could be one of many different things, I think just creates this kind of unsettling climate of doubt and uncertainty.
Yeah, and as you say, I think it is escapism. The book is really good fun. I love the fact that you'll ramp up the tension where needed, but equally you're very happy to throw in sometimes very silly jokes and footnotes that are just enjoyable. So it's never, it's not. I never got to the stage where I was in my own in bed reading it, thinking, "Oh my god, I'm so terrified." I was laughing, but I was also gripped by it. But it's just exactly the right tone for an escapist thing where exactly you kind of just want to see what happens with this. What I love about you is that you really investigate things properly. So in this book, you go to, the Rome one is probably the big story and almost probably the most inexplicable story. But you go to the various places in Rome where the situations happened.
Yeah, that's where I blew my travel budget. the Ryanair tickets on that, I can tell you.
But a lot of people would be tempted to go, "Oh, I can just sit back. This is an easy job. I can look up some old ghost stories and get some emails. I can turn this into a book." It feels like you're really committed. You really want to find out. You really want to experience. I mean, I presume you're going to Rome because you really want to see these things happen in front of your eyes.
Yeah, totally. Totally. I sort of feel like, I would be doing this even if I wasn't sort of making the pods or writing stuff. I think it's just, it's that excitement. You must feel this at times as well. Like that feeling of, like, I guess you could call it play, it's like that sort of childlike kind of thing, that childlike desire for fun, to me, this feels incredibly exciting. I feel like I'm on an adventure. And yes, there's a kind of really serious point to it, and it for me personally, that it sort of feeds into all sorts of kind of quite serious personal moments I've had in my life that give me this kind of desire to have answers on it. But it feels like an adventure, and I think adventures are fun, and hopefully they're fun to go on yourself, but also fun to read about, fun to experience vicariously.
Yeah, well, it is as I say, it's great that you found this niche. You've obviously written 222, a ghost story. You've got all the Uncanny and the Battersea Poltergeist, which we've talked about before, which people should really get into. Yeah, is it just limitless? Do you think are you going to do more books as well as more podcasts? Is it just enough stories coming in?
Well, I mean, I hope so. I mean, I think in terms of stories, yeah. I mean, I feel like we're in this kind of privileged position now that because the podcast feels like something people can trust as a receptacle for their stories, they send them, and we get a lot of stories coming in now. And I love the fact that I think there are a lot of people out there who haven't known who to tell their story to before are coming forward. You know, I think there's a lot of people email me who haven't told their friends about it. And in some cases haven't even told their partners about it. And yeah. So I think the idea that they have found a safe space to tell a story and to try and, you know, scratch an itch and explore something that's been troubling them, I think is important. And actually, you know, even the ones that don't end up on the podcast, you know, hopefully sort of just articulating them, saying them out loud, and, you know, us kind of responding and chatting to people, I think hopefully that helps, you know. So yeah, I mean, I feel like there's a lot of stories coming in. I think any statistics about how many people believe in ghosts or how many people have seen a ghost, I feel are wrong, because I feel like this is much more widespread than people think. I think there's a lot of people out there having ghost or UFO experiences and wanting to talk about it, wanting to ask questions about it, you know. So yeah, I hope it will continue. I mean, certainly we've got a treasure trove of stories moving forward into kind of another podcast season and doing the telly series and that kind of thing. So yeah.
Is it a book tour you're doing this autumn, or is it?
No, it's not. It's a live kind of theatrical tour where I think we're doing like 42 dates around the country, going around to all these theaters, and it's it's bringing ghost stories to life on stage. You know, it's sort of channeling a little bit of a kind of Woman in Black spirit of, you know, bringing a ghost story to life terrifyingly on stage. But, you know, it's new stories again. And it's, I will bring them to life through kind of the amazing magic of theatre with lights and sound and projections and my voice. And then we'll have the experts on stage talking about the stories with me. And we'll also... You know, find out local stories to people wherever we're going, and also hear the stories of people in the audience. So, I mean, it's a sort of, hopefully, a proper frightening, exciting night out in the theatre.
Good. Well, we'll definitely go and see that. I mean, Danny's doing amazing work with this. The book is really enjoyable. Because I live in this old house, I'm sure we talked about this before, but there's been a few sort of instances around here. But my most... The weirdest one is, and the kind of most vivid one was I saw a ghost of my son who isn't dead. So that was weird. So that I can't really make sense of that. And I was in bed, but so, you know, it might have been a dream, but it was so, I mean, it was a dream, but it was so vivid and unusual for me because I can't, I've got aphantasia. So in daytime, I can't visualize stuff. In dreams, I can visualize stuff, so okay. Yeah, that makes it a dream. But my son, you know, I woke up. My son came into the room that didn't say anything, and it was like really absolutely clear. Then he sort of stood with his back to me, close by, and I was going, "Annie, what's going on?" And I reached out to tap him on the shoulder, make him turn around, and my hand just went through him.
Oh my God!
And then I kind of realised it wasn't real, but I don't feel like I woke up. I kind of feel like I was awake, and that my son. Then he obviously disappeared when my hand went through him, and I thought, "Fuck, my son's died," and I've just seen this guy. So I had to go back and check him, and he was fine. Unless there was two of them, and I didn't know. But it was so real. It was so vivid and real that's very hard to explain beyond I'm mental and I was asleep.
the standing with the back to you is the really creepy detail. That's very Blair Witch.
It was odd,
but I think, you know, in a way you kind of hit, you know, the nail on the head there about the nature of these experiences, that they're so terrifying in themselves that, you know, whether it is a ghost or not in a way doesn't matter to you, because it, you know, you'll never forget that will stay with you, kind of burnt into your brain forever, you know. But then, you know, I mean, you know, when you have that, I mean, that's with your son who is alive and sleeping in the next room. But when you have that with somebody that you have lost, you know, that takes on a whole kind of another level of profundity.
Yeah, of course. Well, look, I do recommend this book. You will whiz through it as I did. So do buy it, Into the Uncanny, Danny Robbins. I presume there's an audiobook as well, Danny. Have you done
there is, yeah, read by me. A few people have asked, is it read by you? I'm like, yeah, of course. No, I've given it over to... You
could have got a very spooky Vincent Price.
Leon Morrissey's run and done it.
Yeah. I think you could say it's so written in your voice as well. And, you know, like I say, the silly jokes and the silly footnotes are so much in your voice that it would have to be. And I ask everyone this, but are you reading anything else and that you would like to recommend? Are you a big reader outside of your...
You know, I'm somebody who normally spectacularly fails to read and fails to finish books, but I've actually gone for a purple period. I've just been on holiday and I have read quite a bit whilst away. And the book that really blew me away was Slow Horses by Mick Herron, which has kind of, I guess, slipped into vogue now because of the TV series by our old mate Will Smith, the comedian who wrote and directed it, you know, which is on Apple TV starring Gary Oldman. I've not seen the TV series, but the book is this spy thriller that's kind of, you know, people talk about it being like a sort of modern day successor to John le Carré. It's set in 2010 and it's about this kind of group of failures at MI5, the people who have screwed up over the years. So the guy who left the disc full of classified information on a tube train, you know, the drunks, the kind of people who've failed, you know, people who've failed in various spectacular ways. And it's their little unit and about how they get drawn into an actual case and have to kind of solve it and redeem themselves. And it's just brilliant. And what he does so cleverly is that you're reading for a while and you're going, this doesn't quite make sense. I don't quite get why is this character got a burnt hand? Has it been mentioned earlier? And you're flicking back and you're going, where's the burnt hand? And then, you know, then it makes sense of it a few pages on. You go, like, oh, brilliant, genius. I see how you've done it. And I just love that, you know, it's not, you know, he doesn't just lay everything out easily in a sort of linear way. You have to be a bit of a detective hunting for the clues. So I really, really, really enjoyed that. And I feel that I will probably voraciously work my way through Mick Herron's catalogue as a result of that. But, I mean, the other two books that I find myself recommending quite a bit to ghost fans, if you are interested in the paranormal, is A Natural History of Ghosts by Roger Clark, which is a brilliant kind of scholarly yet kind of really readable and engrossing work on the history of ghosts, basically, and kind of the history of ghost beliefs kind of stretching back and many kind of famous cases over the years, but trying to make sense of it as a kind of cultural and social phenomenon. And and then the other book is Will Storr versus the Supernatural. Will Storr is a journalist who's written many things over the years, but he basically, you know, a bit like I do in the book, you know, he went off on a sort of quest to try and make sense of the supernatural. And it's a book that I read many, many years ago and certainly kind of was an inspiration. And and it's another great read. So I think, you know, obviously don't buy any of those books before you buy mine. You know,
yes,
buy my book, read my book. And then, you know, if you want more ghosts, then go out and read those.
That's fantastic. And I should say, the great thing about your book is you don't have to have listened to any of your podcasts. I mean, I think there's a little bit of, if you do listen to the podcast, you will recognize some stuff, I guess, but, you know, a tone and stuff. But you don't need to have listen to the podcast. Do listen to the podcast as well. But equally, if you have listened to the podcast, this is all pretty much all new information. So you straddle both those worlds very.
No, no, I think you know that's it was important to me. You don't want to write something that's just for the insiders. You know, something that only makes sense if you've heard the pod. I think this is for everyone. I'd love to think that, you know, people would read this on their sun lounger on the beach next summer, or you know, you read it on your commute to work or whatever. I think it's I wanted to write something that was a non-fiction factual book that felt as gripping as, you know, any kind of crime thriller page turner. You know, I wanted to kind of treat a subject that to me feels, you know, incredibly exciting and full of cliffhangers, these ghost stories, and give it that kind of treatment, I think.
Yeah, well, it's very artfully done, and, try and come up with some answers to this stuff beyond everyone in the stories is a lying craziness. But I don't think they're lying. I think you can't be sure that they're all not lying, but I think as you say, there's the people believe the stories is what's interesting about it.
Yeah, it's the whites of the eyes, isn't it? I mean, I think somebody asked me the other day, like, how do you make sure that nobody's hoaxing you? And you know, it's obviously impossible. There's no kind of foolproof thing when you have complete strangers approaching you. I mean, you know, you can do all the background checks in the world, and we do that. But, you know, somebody could still be this incredibly, you know, clever con man. You know, just because you do a normal job doesn't mean you couldn't kind of fabricate a story. But so it comes down to instinct, really. And you're kind of looking in the whites of people's eyes. You're kind of talking to this person, spending several hours with them or several days with them in some cases. And then you're kind of cross-checking it and speaking to other people, other witnesses around it. And, you know, I have to stake my reputation on each one of these cases, you know, because Uncanny would fall apart if any of these things were fake or these people were making stuff up, you know. And I do stake my reputation on that. And I think in each of these cases, the person is telling the truth, what they believe the truth is. And I don't believe they have any mental health issues that explain or factor into these cases, you know. So I think, you know, that they are that kind of, you know, the if you look at the old M.R. James stories, those kind of classic ghost stories, they are that kind of sane and rational person who has the extraordinary experience.
And what a tragic con man they would be if they put their efforts into just fooling you, Danny. And that was I went on a podcast and I made a man think I'd seen a ghost for no reward. So I might do it. I died 10 years ago today. I'm just going to disappear now. look, it's really lovely to talk to you. Congratulations on the book and on everything you're doing. It's so great to see this turning into such a fantastic career for you, which is well deserved, and thank you for talking to us on the podcast.
Thank you, Danny
Robbins.
A pleasure.
And thank you also, of course, to Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, not that one, for all the work they're doing. We'll be back with more of these very soon. Woo! I'm a ghost. Woo!
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. richardherring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.